Information, please. For the American Armed Forces and their allies, a special rebroadcast featuring the expert. And here to ask the questions is the well-known writer and literary critic, Clifton Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight, Information, please, spontaneous and unrehearsed as ever, is back in New York after our visit to Toronto last week. And our regular experts, Mr. John Kieran of the New York Sun and Mr. Franklin P. Adams, are on hand to welcome two of our favorite feminine experts, the poet and lecturer, Jan Struther, and the author of the best-selling novel, The Walsh Girls, Elizabeth Janeway. We're going to begin with a question from Edwin F. Edgett of Arlington, Massachusetts. Unless I miss my guess, Mr. Edgett is a well-known literary critic. Can you identify these calls for men, in fact or in song? Here are several calls. Identify them. The first was a call for 10 men. Now, this might be in a famous song, or a reasonably famous song. 10 men, Mrs. Janeway.
I think it's from the operetta New Moon. Stout-hearted men.
That's right, Miss Janeway. Very good.
Something with 10 who are stout-hearted men and so on.
That's one. And I'll soon give you 10,000 more. Yes. Have you ever heard that, Mr. Adams?
Never heard of it at all.
You've missed practically all the baritones there are. How about a call for 75,000 men? Mr. Kieran.
President Abraham Lincoln at the start of the Civil War.
Yes, there was a call for volunteers. Can you tell me exactly when that call was issued?
Right after the first Battle of Bull Run, I think.
I think before that. Right after Fort Sumter, unless I'm mistaken.
No, well, right around the time of the first Battle of Bull Run.
Very near, yes. April 15th.
Guess he needed a little more after the first Battle of Bull Run.
Yes, it was a modest call. How about fat men? Who called for fat men? Mr. Adams.
Let me have men about me who are fat and such as sleep all night.
That's the fella. Who said this, Mr. Adams?
Somebody in Julius Caesar.
That's quite right. Mr. Kieran, want to straighten
it? Highest Julius Caesar.
Yes, he was talking to whom?
He was talking to the friends around him. Now, let me see. Not Mark Antony, because...
Yes, I think it was.
Well, Mark Antony was there, recruited for the course, I believe. I don't think he was chatting with him. Chatting with one of the bystanders.
What a reporter you would have made, Mr. Kieran. And he was talking... He was talking about whom, Mr. Kieran?
He was talking about yonder Cassius, who hath that lean and hungry look.
Yes. Mrs. Janeway?
I couldn't quite make out from Mr. Adams whether he said sleep all night or sleep om night.
Sleep all apostrophe nights.
You got to spell things out on this show, Mr. Adams. Sleep nights, you know, like 8 o'clock. How about this one? From Harold Sharp of North Hollywood, California. This is a musical question, ladies and gentlemen. Get 2 out of 3. What event in American history is brought to mind by this music? Let's have the first. Miss Struther?
Boston Tea Party.
Boston Tea Party. What's being played?
Tea for two.
Tea for two. And could you give us the date of the Boston Tea Party?
Oh, dear.
Mrs. Janeway, could you help us out with that?
Well, it brought another historical event to my mind.
What one?
Well, I thought of the time that the midget sat on J.P. Morgan's lap. You know, it starts that picture you upon my knee.
That's a far-fetched. I don't know whether that's an event in American history. It was certainly an event in American publicity, shall we say. The Boston Tea Party was 1773, if you want to carry that around with you from now on. Mr. Kieran, was there something you wanted to tell
us? Not a thing, no.
How about the second piece of music, Mr. Kahn? Now, what would that bring to mind? Apparently, Miss Struther has it.
The Missouri Compromise.
Why?
Well, because it's the Missouri Waltz.
That's very good. You take yourself very modestly, Miss Struther, yes. What was the Missouri Compromise? You don't have to know this.
I thought that was coming up.
Well, you can always say it was a compromise about Missouri.
It was about slavery.
Yes, it was about slavery. It was a compromise in which Missouri was admitted as a slave state, as against, Mr. Kieran?
Maine
was admitted as a free state.
Admitted as a free state.
Right. And there were other planks
to
it.
Yes, there was a line beyond which slavery was not to be permitted afterward.
Yes, the land north of 36 degrees 30 minutes it was, and Louisiana Territory was to be free, and south of it was to be slave. This is a very instructive evening, don't you think so, Mr. Adams? Now the third and last. say that as an Englishwoman, Miss Struther, you're putting our American friends here to shame.
Well, I may
have
been
right.
I
have Mr. Janeway's hand.
Well,
Janeway?
I know what it is, but it's our little gray home in the West.
And doesn't it call to mind any historical...
Well, the opening of the West, or old pioneers, or all kinds of things like that.
That would do. Mr. Adams?
Union Pacific Railroad.
Union Pacific Railroad, as signalizing the opening of the West, Miss Struther?
About the Alcatraz.
It's not a historical event. How about pinning it down to the Homestead Act of 1862, which, as you may remember, offered a farm of 160 acres free to any citizen of the United States who settled on it and cultivated it for 5 years. That was really the act which opened up the West in a wholesale way. That gives us 3 out of 3. Try this one from Mr. J.W. Lachelle of North Hollywood, California. Quote 3 famous lines, more if you wish, that mention parts of a tree. Any line of verse or prose familiar to me, at least, that mentions a part of a tree, Mr. Adams?
In poetry, you mean?
Doesn't have to be.
My bark is on the shore.
Yes, very good. What's it from, Frank?
Oh, I think it's something. It was about Tom Moore.
That sounds
I think
good.
Probably Byron wrote it, but I don't know.
Sounds good. Now, it gives us bark. Miss Struther?
Under the blossom that hangs on the bough, merrily, merrily, shall we live now.
Right. That gives us a bough, and it gives us bark. We have to get one more part of a tree. Mrs. Janeway?
Entreat me not to leave thee.
Oh, that's very pretty. Very pretty. And Mr. Kieran, will help us out with a fourth?
Hark where my blossom pear tree in the hedge leans to the field and scatters on the clover blossoms and dewdrops.
That's beauty. What's that from?
It's from Browning.
Lovely lines. Miss Struther again.
Leave us face it.
I think we'll leave it lay now, Miss Struther. And now, ladies and gentlemen, suppose we go on with this one from Mr. J.I. Davis of Franklin, Pennsylvania. And I think we should get all on this three-part question. What famous man wished he had written Gray's Elegy? Oh, I have several hands. Miss Struther.
Wolfe.
Who?
General Wolfe.
General Wolfe. Can you tell us about him?
Said I would sooner have written Gray's Elegy than taken Quebec.
And what did he do the next day?
Took Quebec.
Yes, and died, too. Yes, that's a very famous story. Which do you think will last longer, the taking of Quebec or the elegy, Miss Struther?
Well, I guess the elegy.
I guess it will, yes. What famous man, we'll stick to these famous men for a minute or two, wished he had said that? Mr. Adams.
Whistler.
Oh, man.
Oh, Contreras.
Mr. Kieran, you want to straight Mr. Adams?
Oscar Wilde.
What's the story?
Oh, well, and then Whistler said, don't worry, you will. Don't worry, Oscar, you will.
Remember that next week when Oscar...
I remembered it a couple of weeks ago.
Of course, you meant Oscar Wilde, but I don't know. That's you right. said Whistler. I think I'm going to count you wrong on that, Mr. Adams.
Correct.
Kieran straightened you out just a little too late. How about a famous man who wished he hadn't written some very famous verses? Mr. Kieran.
Well, one was Oliver Wendell Holmes.
What famous verses did he wish he hadn't written?
He wrote some funny verses, and he gave them to his man, and he said, take these to the printer, there'll be the devil to pay. And the verses were so funny that the wretched man fell down in a fit. And after that, Oliver Wendell Holmes resolved in that verse never again to write as funny as he could.
That's right. I'll never again write as funny as I can. That's very good, Mr. Kieran. I hadn't remembered that. Miss Struther?
Well, didn't Janet Burgess wish he'd never written The Purple Cow?
He did, indeed. Do you remember the lines in which he regretted having written it? Mr. Janeway, do you remember them?
Yes, I wrote The Purple Cow. I'm sorry that I wrote it. But I will tell you anyhow. I'll kill you if you quote it.
And I shan't. That gives us only 2 out of 3. That passes us on to this one from Mrs. Pearl Wheaton of Rochester, New York. And again, we should get all, I think. I have 3 words here that sound somewhat alike. Who would be most interested in a dowel? D-O-W-E-L. Who would be most interested in a dowel? D-O-W-E-L, Miss Struther. What is a dowel?
Carpenter,
yes. What is it? What is a dowel exactly, Mr. Kieran?
They call it dowel pin, mostly. That is, they use dowel pins in constructing beam joints.
Yes, or uniting any 2 pieces of wood. It's a wooden pin or peg. A cabinet maker might use it. A carpenter, as Miss Struther reminds us. How about someone who'd be interested in a rowel, R-O-W-E-L? Miss Struther again.
A horseman.
What is a rowel?
It's a spiky spot of a spiky part of a spur.
Yes, tough thing to say, isn't
Stay
it?
Hard.
Spiky part of a spur. Mr. Janeway?
I just thought the horse would be more interested.
Yes, your reply is more pointed than the Strutter's is. How about a trowel? A trowel. Mr. Adams?
I'd use it.
You? That's right, you are a gardener. I had never known it before this. What is a trowel, exactly?
Bit of a spade.
Mr. Garrett?
About a bricklayer, too.
Bricklayer, too, yes. It is spread and dressed mortar with it. A member of the Masonic Order might be interested in the trowel. Isn't that one of the symbols of the Masonic Order, Mr. Cairn?
I believe so.
I think so, yes. Well, that gives us dowel, rowel, and trowel, and sends us on to this one from Lena Rivelson of Brooklyn, New York. Name the authors of the books in which these heroines appear. Let's get 2 out of 3. I'm going to give you 3 sets of 3 heroines. Here's the first set of 3 heroines. Bathsheba, Eustacia, Tess. Who wrote the books in which those 3 heroines, Mr. Adams, appear?
Thomas Hardy.
Quite right. Now, can you identify those 3 heroines for us?
Bathsheba Everdeen.
Quite right. In what book? Pick a novel. Anybody care to help Mr. Adams out?
I forget.
Maybe Far from the Madding Crowd. You were just about to say.
No, I wouldn't.
Oh, come on, Adams. That's not the way to play.
And who's the other one? Eustacia Vye.
Yes. What novel of Hardy?
I don't remember which one that was in.
Mr. Kieran.
Is that the Mayor of Casterbridge?
No.
The Return of the Nation.
Return of the Nation, yes. And Tess, Mr. Adams?
Tess Derbyfield.
Yes, of what novel?
Tess of the D'Urbervilles.
Good, couldn't miss that one. How about, here's another set of 3 first names, heroines. Estella, Agnes, Lucy. Who wrote about all 3 of them in 3 different books? Estella, Agnes, Lucy. Mr. Kieran, you're thinking hard.
No, I'm thinking of an English novel.
That's quite right. They are English. We should get this.
Well, Lucy was in a book by Dickens. Agnes was in a book by David Copperfield.
Yes, so these are all written by the same author.
And what's the other one?
Estella.
Estella, I do not know.
Mrs. Janeway.
I think she's in Great Expectations.
Yes, she's the heroine of Great Expectations. These are all by Charles Dickens. Agnes Wickfield, as Mr. Kieran says, and David Copperfield, Lucy and Taylor.
Lucy Manette.
Now here, finally, is another set of 3 heroines, all in 3 books by the same writer. Marion, Antonia, and Lucy again. This is a different Lucy.
What's the second one?
Antonia.
How do you spell it?
A-N-T-O-N-I-A. Don't you like the way I pronounce that, Mr. Adams? Mr. Kieran?
I'd take a guess on Willa Cabot.
That's quite right.
My Antonia, that's all I know.
Yes. I think the name is pronounced Antonia. There's a little...
Not in the Bronx.
That's what threw me.
Oh, well, that was what's intended to throw you. Marion is what heroine? Marion Forrester in A Lost Lady... Antonia Shimerda in My Antonia, and Lucy Gayheart in Lucy Gayheart, all by Willa Cather. Well, that gives us 3 out of 3. Try this one from R. McDonald of San Francisco and get 2 out of 3. And this again will be a musical question, ladies and gentlemen. How many people and what sexes, that should be easy, there are only 2, roughly speaking, how many people and what sexes are involved in each of these pieces of music? Let's have the first. Mr. Adams' hand at once.
One sex.
One sex. And how many people?
20 maidens.
20 maidens, yes.
Lovesick all against their will.
That's that. You find them where, Mr. Adams?
Impatience,
yes, by Gilbert and Sullivan. 20 maidens. Now the second. Ideas. Yes, Miss Trella.
Seems to me to be out of Chuchin Chow.
No, that's way before your time and my time, Miss Trella. You're just guessing. No, it isn't out of Chuchin Chow that I know of. I don't know. Mr. Kieran?
Have the faintest idea.
Any, would you care to have, let's have one of those extravagant guesses, Mr. Adams?
Well, it sounds like the male sex entirely, but
that's
I don't
quite
know.
Quite right. Absolutely right.
I don't know what it is.
Boy, can you pick your sexes. That's marvelous, yes. It's marvelous, yes. Male sex is right. And would you name, would you guess how many men are involved in this song?
No, I never heard.
Oh, guess it. What's the difference? I'll try to put it into your head.
One.
No, 15. You're only 14 now. Yes, Miss Trevor.
15 men on the dead man's.
That's it. Yes. 15 men on a dead man's chest. That's the one. I wish we could give you full credit, Mr. Adams. I'm afraid we can't. Now we have to get the next one right to get by on this question, Mr. Kahn. Mrs. Janeway?
Four men.
How can you prove that?
Well,
what was being played?
I can.
What was being played, Mr. Janeway? Mr. Adams?
Glorious. One keg of beer for the four of us.
That's right. You've got the right number. But how about the, were they all men, Mr. Adams?
Yes, but I think, no, that's right. There were four.
There were four, yes. Glorious, one keg of beer for the four of us. Isn't that the song about the South family, for I'm a member of the South family? It's only reasonable to suppose that a family would have at least one female member. Wouldn't you say that, Mr. Adams?
No, because that's a different song.
It is?
Mm-hmm.
Should I let Mrs. Janeway's answer go, then?
Yes, that's
all
right.
All right, I'll let it go. That gives us two out of three. And now we have time for a few more. This one comes from Elizabeth G. Coates of New York City. I get two out of three, if you can. If you lived in each of these places, ladies and gentlemen, in whose novel would you be a character? If you lived, for example, in Combray, in whose novel, Mrs. Janeway?
In Proust.
Marcel Proust,
yes.
And what is the name of the novel?
The Remembrance of Things Past.
Yes. It begins with Swan's Way, doesn't it?
I can do them all if you really want me to.
You can?
Yes, I can.
Good heavens. Not on this show. It's an awfully long novel. Isn't it the town where the narrator lives?
Yes, as a little boy.
Yes, during part of his childhood. Quite right. Suppose you lived in Mansfield Park. You'd be a character in whose novel? Miss Struther?
Jane Austen.
Jane Austen, yes. Mansfield Park would be found in which novel?
Mansfield Park.
Attaboy. Yes, that's the name of one of her... How many novels did she write? Mrs. Janeway?
Six.
Did you name them for us?
Yes. Pride and Prejudice, Emma, Persuasion, Sense and Sensibility, Mansfield Park, and Northanger Abbey.
Good heavens, that's very good. Very good. That's your Dumas.
I'll reel off Proust for you in a minute if you don't look out.
Try this one. Suppose you lived in Jefferson, in whose novel... Or novels, would you be a character?
In
Jefferson. Jefferson. Just Jefferson. We have two out of three. That doesn't come back to you, Mrs. Janeway. I know you've read the novels of William Faulkner.
Oh,
and
of course.
It's the scene of many of his novels. Jefferson, presumably Mississippi, isn't it?
Yes.
I won't ask you what kind of character you'd be apt to be if you were in one of those novels, Mrs. Janeway, but if you lived in Jefferson, you'd be a Faulkner character. That gives us two out of three. Here's one from Myron Jordan of South Pasadena, California. Again, get two out of three. Name a French ruler who spoke with an Italian accent. Well, a very famous one. There may have been several. Mr. Kieran.
Man, woman, or...
Man.
A man who spoke with an Italian accent.
That's right. You know him very well.
You mean he was king or was he prime minister?
He was a ruler of France.
Mazarin.
He
spoke with an Italian accent. In fact, he spoke more Italian than he did French.
But he wasn't a... perhaps I should say king.
Oh, well, that's
if I say
I
king,
you.
Does that make it harder? Miss Strother?
I would have said Napoleon.
Napoleon would be quite right, yes. Why did he speak with an Italian accent?
Well, because he was born in Corsica.
Yes, born in Corsica.
Well, that wasn't the story they gave when he was elected one of the 40 immortals. They said he spoke the purest French.
Yes, but how would you be if you were one of those fellows who elected him in those days? What would you say?
Not immortal.
No, he did speak, we think, with an Italian accent. How about an English ruler who never learned to speak English? An English ruler, Mrs. Janeway?
Well, one of the Georges.
Well, which one, though? Mr. Kieran.
Well, probably the first.
Yes, George the First. He was the first British king of the House of Brunswick, and he never learned to speak English at all. How about a German ruler? A German ruler whose writings are all in French. Mr. Kieran.
Well, I think that was Voltaire's friend.
Yes, and what was his name?
Well, it was...
You've got the right man, all right.
Yes, the great. So-and-so the great.
Yes, you've got his last name, the great. First name?
Prussia.
Yes. So you got his address and you've got his last...
Frederick the Great.
Frederick the Great. Yes, that's right, Mr. Carey.
Lived at Sans Souci.
That's the fellow, yes. Try this one for Miss Lena M. Tewksbury of Fitchburg, Massachusetts, and get all. In each of these quotations, can you tell to what the word it refers? The word it appears in each of these quotations, and the first is, some do it with a bitter look. The word it refers, Mr. Kieran, to what?
Refers to a killing somebody.
Yes. Can you give
a
us
coward, a line? Coward does it with a kiss, the brave man with a sword.
Yes, yet each man kills the thing he loves.
By Ballad of Reading Jail.
Ballad of Reading Jail. Oscar Wilde is quite right. It will not last the night. Mr. Adams.
My candle burns at both ends.
Go ahead.
It will not last the night. By Edna Millay.
Edna Millay. How the last two lines go of that lovely quatrain, Mr. Janeway?
It gives a lovely light.
Yes, you've left out the
third
line.
All my foes and all my friends, it gives a lovely light.
Yes, by Edna St. Vincent Millay. Now, here's another and last it. It means just what I choose it to mean. What's the reference? Mr. Adams again.
That's from Lewis Carroll.
It is indeed. And what's
about
the
about a word?
About a word. When I use a word, Humpty Dumpty said, it means just what I choose it to mean, neither more nor less. That gives us three it's out of three and sends us on to this one from Althea Burkle of Freeport, New York. Get two out of three. What formula is suggested by each of these? The first is dextromaltose. Mrs. Janeway.
A baby's formula.
Yes, baby's formula. What is dextromaltose and how does
it taste? It's a kind of sugar and it tastes rather like malt, I think.
Babies love it for some reason or other.
They do. At least it smells like malt when I'm putting it in.
You know, babies smell like malt, too. They have that kind of malty smell. Yes, it's a feeding formula for
and
very small babies.
They sound like it, too.
How about this phrase, 15%? What formula would that suggest to you? 15%. Mr. Kieran.
Well, 15% is used in an eye lotion. What is it? That's put in babies' eyes and also grown people's eyes, too. But when babies are born, well, that seems a little strong for babies.
It
but does. I think it's safe.
You're poisoning the babies on the show.
It's a dark-colored liquid mixture that looks... Leave them on something like iodine.
I was thinking of the little steel formula, which places... Now, you may be right, Mr. Kieran. You know, the little steel formula places a ceiling on wages at 15% above the rate prevailing on January 1st, 1941. And 31416 would mean what formula, Mr. Adams?
Pi.
Yes, the formula for the circumference of a circle.
Yes.
And that's all we'll have time for. Thank you, Miss Struller and Miss Janeway, for lending us your feminine charm and wit this evening.
Information, Please, was presented especially for the American Armed Forces and their allies. Now we present Alfred Wallenstein and the Concert Orchestra. is the Armed Forces Radio Service.